United Lutheran Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast, conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more, with voices from around the corner and around the globe.
Welcome to the Seminary Explores. My name is Nelson Strobert, and my guest today is Dr. Suzanne Samples, Professor of Modern Languages at Mount St. Mary's University in Emmitsburg, Maryland. Welcome to the Seminary Explorers.
Thank you.
You were the recipient of a professorship, the DePlain Faculty Seminar Fellowship. Could you share with our listening audience what that is?
Well, it's a rotating endowed professorship. I have it for 3 years. I'm entering into my third and unfortunately last year. It's a competitive professorship. One has to apply, and then one is vetted through various bureaucracies until one is informed whether one has it or not. So it's a rotating professorship. And one of the perks is that I was able to lead a faculty seminar for 2 weeks during the summer. And so that's part of my duties. And so the summer of 2018 and the summer of 2019, I led a two-week seminar. The faculty came from diverse disciplines. I had scientists, I had social scientists, I had humanities. It was very, very fruitful in terms of discussions and the perspectives that people brought with them to the table.
How were the faculty chosen?
It was basically first come, first served. It was open to the entire faculty community. That is not competitive unless the seats fill up very quickly. But there was plenty of room, and the people that showed interest really were very motivated and great in terms of discussion.
May I ask, how many participants did you have over the course of the two summers?
It was about 10 to 11, 10 to 12. The max was 15, but I liked having the smaller numbers because it made it much more intimate in terms of discussing topics. And what was really nice about the second seminar was that there was no one that actually dominated the conversation. And the first, there were one or two that would get into these, you know, deep discussions,
right,
and I felt like other people were feeling left out. Whereas this year, it was just better in terms of everyone had a chance to discuss.
More shared leadership.
Yeah, and it was just more pleasant. No one felt left out. That's the last thing I wanted.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. I looked at your syllabus, and the title for the seminar was The Black Diaspora in Europe. Was that the focus both summers?
It was the focus both summers because most of my colleagues are not really aware of the Black Diaspora in Europe. I thought it was best to give this information in a chronological sequence. And so the first seminar started at the very beginning, so to speak, with the Greco-Roman world, the ancient world, and took us up to about, the Russian Revolution, so 1917, maybe 1930. And then the second seminar picked up with the Weimar Republic. So there's a little bit of overlap, but a different country. Weimar Republic is 1919 to 1933. I must admit, the second seminar had a more heavy German emphasis. But then again, I'm a Germanist, so that would be understandable.
Right. And when I looked at the title, it made me wonder. I think there are not many people, when we think of the Black diaspora or when we think of people of color in Europe, we think of people as tourists and not people who have lived there. And so I was intrigued by the title.
Well, if you go back in time, let's say to the ancient world, there was always contact between Europe and Africa. And there's a man, his name was Dr. Snowden. He was of Howard University, and he was very courageous. He was a pioneer in that he did extensive research showing how the ancient world, although they were aware of the differences in skin color, facial features, hair textures, blah, 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 they didn't attach any value judgment.
Okay.
This came later, and so it was important for me to show my colleagues exactly how Europeans change in their perspective regarding Africa and Africans. And so that's why I did it chronologically. So anyway, it was just very important that they realize that Africans, people of African descent, have been in Europe for many centuries, and that they have contributed in various ways. I believe that one of the reasons why most colleagues, most people are unaware of the presence of these people of African descent has to do with, well, I guess with two phenomena. First, the slave trade.
Mm-hmm.
Where you had the dehumanization of blacks, and secondly, the colonization of Africa, where you had the exploitation of the indigenous populations, as well as their natural resources. Against this background, you also had in the 19th century, Hegel, who completely dismissed Africa, saying it was devoid of history, kind of saying it was okay to colonize and to exploit the continent. But you also had the social Darwinists, who were responsible for the so-called racial hierarchy, and that yes. Europeans were on the top and Africans were on the bottom. 19th century witnessed the rise of racism, and I would contend that racism was very much in sync with nationalism. And so for Europeans to feel superior, they had to invent an other, and the black leather was very convenient. An other could also be used, you know, to look at anyone who was non-European, but my focus is on people of African descent.
Right.
So in the 19th century, when you had historians, you know, putting down their national histories, they were incredibly racist and nationalistic, and therefore any minority group was overlooked or ignored or erased, mm-hmm. and everything. And that was especially true for people of African descent living in Europe. So my whole purpose is to show my colleagues and hopefully the wider campus that there's always been an African presence in Europe, albeit maybe very small, but they were there.
Right.
And it kind of parallels what happened here in our own country, in that for a long time, the accomplishments of African Americans were overlooked, erased, and it was, you know, that was just commonplace. And so you have that in Europe as well. So my purpose with doing the seminar and the professorship is to try to get people aware that diversity isn't something that just happened in the 20th century, that it's been there, and that unfortunately, our curriculum, like so many curricula in various universities, is very Eurocentric. And
right.
because it's Eurocentric, people of color who have to, you know, who study, let's say, the West, get the impression that they made no contribution whatsoever, or their ancestors or their particular ethnic group or religious group made no contributions whatsoever to the West, and that's not really true. And I also think that because of the changing demographics in our own country and also in Europe, that it's important to show that there has been this presence, and that, you know, the West needs to be a lot more inclusive.
Exactly. I think we talked earlier about Professor Amo, who taught in Germany in the 18th century. And I remember looking up, reading in terms of 19th century Europe and in France, where you had African studying at the university.
Oh, yes.
And it was mind-blowing for Euro-Americans going over to France and at the Sorbonne and seeing, you know, these people of color studying at the university. So we have been there.
Oh, yes, we have. There was an African-American actor in the 19th century. His name was Ira Aldridge.
Right.
And he was really important because he was a Shakespearean actor. And, of course, in our own country, he had no chance of ever achieving any kind of success. So what did he do? He went over to Europe, where he was welcomed and heralded. And they attribute him with introducing many Russians to Shakespeare because of his performances. And so, you know, there's so many examples. I mean, you know, you look at the racism here in our own country, and for people who were able, and we're talking about very, very few, obviously, but the people who were able to go to Europe, who were able to experience a life without prejudice and discrimination, I can only imagine how liberating it must have been for them to kind of be able to walk down the streets and hold their heads up without having people, you know, beat them up or ridicule them or make them feel less than human.
Exactly.
And so Europe was attracted to a number of people of African descent, not just, you know, people from Africa, but from, you know, the New World. Because at that time, talking about, let's say, 19th century or early 20th century, it was fairly open.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, with rising nationalism and like in the late 20s, late 30s, again, nationalism is always closely aligned with racism.
Right.
And so you had regimes such as Mussolini's or Hitler's or even Stalin, who, you know, were incredibly nationalistic.
Okay. Could you share with us the structure of the seminar?
Well, part of my job was to select readings to make it manageable in terms of the reading load. And so it was fun for me to do research. It was almost like being in graduate school again. And so I did the research. And then I bought the books, or the professorship bought the books. And then the books were distributed to members participating in the seminar. The format of the actual seminar itself, we would discuss various books and articles. Each year I showed a film. The first year I showed Circus, which is a 1936 Soviet film, and it's all about how wonderful the Soviet Union is in terms of its openness toward other peoples versus America, which is racist. And then the second year, this past summer, I did Otomo, and it is based on a true story. It's speculative, but it follows the last 12 hours of an African immigrant's life in Stuttgart, Germany, and everything. And so very interesting films, very powerful films, showing, you know, each country's reaction toward people of color.
Right. Could you share with us some of the readings that, or identify some of the readings that you had the participants?
Well, in the first seminar, okay, I mentioned Snowden, and his book is called Blacks in Antiquity. It's a classic. He wrote that like in 1972, so you have to think about the context of time and what was going on in America and everything.
Right.
But of course, being a medievalist, in addition to being a 21st century scholar of the Black diaspora, there's a book called Parzival, and it's Middle High German Arthurian romance. And what makes this interesting is that the first book is all about Bellacana, who is a black queen. And it was written around, let's say, 1200. Oh. So it was the height of the Crusades, and yet you have the courtly culture being the unifier. And what Wolfram does is he focuses on the hero's reaction to her black skin. He can't get over how black her skin is, and okay. her subjects are also black, but it's not there's no moral judgment, there's right. no moral connotation. He's just, you know, he just can't get over it, and he falls in love with her, and it has nothing to do with her skin color in terms of, you know, so I like that, and I started the seminar with that book. Another article that I did had to do with the German colonization of Africa and how brutal the German colonization of Africa was, and how Germans, when they persecuted the Herero and the Namba tribes, actually committed the first genocide. So we have like evidence that it was genocide, what they did and everything. But there was another book, Adu, and she flips it around. She's an African woman who goes to live in Germany for a few months, and we see her, the African gaze, looking at the Germans. And it's very, very insightful what she talks, how she presents the Germans and everything. There's a autobiography of Gannibal. Gannibal was the African who was the godson to Peter the Great in Russia. There was a autobiography that just biography that just came out, which I used. I also, like, looking at this past summer seminar, I used Hans-Jürgen Mascois. In German, it's interesting. It's called Neger, Neger, Schornsteinfeger, Neger, Neger, Chimney Sweep. And sometimes Neger means Negro. It depends on how you want to use it.
Right.
But anyway, but it's about this man who actually lived in Hamburg during the Third Reich. And he subsequently came to this country. He served in the military, and he was an assistant editor of Ebony. And he lived in D.C., and he just died a few years ago. So that was interesting. Another book that I used was The Invisible Woman. And again, this is the autobiography of a biracial woman who was born right after World War II, and her odyssey into finding selfhood and finding, you know, self-identity. Those are two incredibly strong personal testimonies of the resilience of humanity. I also did one, Soul to Soul, which was about an Afro-Russian. And that was just fascinating in itself, in that her grandparents had come from the United States to the Soviet Union like in the 20s, and her grandparents were an interracial couple. Her grandfather was black. Her grandmother was white, or Jewish. And so they could never have a life in the United States. And so they went to the Soviet Union. And then her mother married an African. Okay. And so they had this strong tradition of very strong women in their family.
Mm-hmm.
And also they spoke English. And she also has her black relatives in the United States and also her Jewish relatives in the United States. So that's really interesting. And I think that people found it very fascinating.
Indeed.
So, I mean, those are just a few of the books that we read. But there was always a lively discussion.
I was about to say, yeah, those books would incite a good discussion.
Because it was something new. I think the faculty appreciated that. It wasn't the same old, same old. I mean, in most cases, like, we did read Fanon, but right. of course, then Fanon is something that most people have read. But with the exception of Fanon, I would say that, you know, the books were like really new, and
right.
I think they had a lot of food for thought, and it was a lot of good discussion. And so one of my plans is that now that the two seminars are over and I'm a little bit behind, I will publish their essays. They all had to write an essay.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And so I will publish their essays, and then once they've had a chance to read over the essays, I'm going to bring them together. Each group I'll bring together, and there's some overlap. Some people
right.
did both seminars, but they'll be separate in this respect. And then we'll discuss the essays, and I'll have wine and, you know, nibbles and everything like
right.
that.
Right, so follow-up.
I want to do follow-up.
Right. Will this publication or the publications be available to those of us outside of the Mount University community?
Well, now that I have been made aware of that possibility, yes, I'll definitely make sure that a copy goes online.
Oh,
so that people will have access to it if they're interested in it.
Oh, good, good. I'd like to for you to share, if you will, the importance. What do you see as the importance of the seminar being held at Mount St. Mary's, a Catholic university?
Well, you know, Catholic can be spelled two ways. It can be spelled with an uppercase C or a lowercase C. And
right.
the lowercase C means universal. Okay? And so to me, it's fitting that we should explore this whole idea of welcoming and being open to all peoples. And especially in the time that we're living, I think it's really important to stress the common humanity that we all share as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you read the autobiographies or the biographies of some of these people of African descent and their experiences in Europe, you can't but, you know, feel the shared humanity.
Okay.
And so my goal again is to begin to diversify our curriculum, not just, you know, the core curriculum, like the required courses, but also in the majors, to have people start thinking, how can I make this more inclusive, this course, so that everyone feels ownership, everyone feels, feels dignity.
Okay.
I think that's incredibly important, and why not at Mount St. Mary's? There should be this social activism of righting wrongs, and a great wrong was committed against Africa and the people of Africa, and that's something that I think people still don't understand. If I may digress, I think that's the problem here in the United States, is that the whole issue of slavery has never really been discussed, and it undermines everything. It has poisoned everything that we've done as a country. We have ideals, and it's up to us, regardless of our faith or non-faith, to try to strive for these ideals. Ideals are never, ever achieved, but the whole idea of striving toward these ideals. And so I would hope that people would recognize the humanity in all people, regardless of gender or ethnicity or race
right.
or sexual orientation or whoever, whatever.
Exactly.
And everything. So I would think, yes, it's good that the Mount, you know, I'm able to do this at the Mount, but I would hope that all institutions of higher education would be interested in trying to stress the common humanity that we all share.
Oh, well, I can't believe our time has run out. I want to really thank you for sharing your insights and your experiences as the De La Plaine Faculty Seminar Professor. My guest today has been Dr. Suzanne Samples, Professor of Modern Languages at Mount St. Mary's University in Emmitsburg, Maryland. For the Seminary Explorers, this is Nelson Strobrick. Have a good day.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explorers, a production of United Lutheran Seminary with campuses in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We invite you to visit our website at unitedlutheranseminary.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of United Lutheran Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.